Signs of the Southland, February 4th for 2024. Gentlemen, we did a midweek episode for the first time in a while with all of us in the same meeting, plus Rahul from the Technique and the Blueprint on the UNC game earlier this week. So if you want to catch up on all of the clamor from that specific victory, check that out in your podcast feed. If you want to talk about the upcoming softball season, if you want to hear us talk about the softball season, that is, along with Madison Myers of Rec Radio's Ramblin' Rec, is it Ramblin' Rec Sports Show? I
I think
believe
that's
it is.
correct, yeah.
See, I should have this in front of me. But if you want to hear us talk with her about softball, that is also in your podcast feeds. We're going to take this time for you to go look at those, not only look at those, not only look those up, but also take a couple seconds to rate the show and subscribe. If you're not subscribed already, go grab your parents' phones and go subscribe on those. Download the Apple Podcasts app and subscribe there. Spotify, Overcast, I don't know, other podcast apps you know of, gentlemen. Throw them in here. We're stalling for time.
Google Podcast, we have to convince the algorithms that we're worth it promoting. So it comes from listeners interacting with
Pocket
the
Casts?
podcast. Is a
Pocket
thing,
Casts
yeah.
is another one.
It's a good one. Yeah, Stitcher
Castro?
trust. Stitcher. SoundCloud.
Stitcher's a throwback.
Are we're not on
SoundCloud.
SoundCloud, are I
we?
don't think we're on
No, we're not on
SoundCloud.
SoundCloud.
No.
We're not.
What was I gonna say? I'm gonna borrow a bit from the Compound Podcast, hosted by Ian Happ, a great Chicago Cub. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, do all three all at once. I don't know, I
And
thought that
then
was
do that on your friends' phones, and then do that on your parents' phones, and then your siblings' phones, and then your grandparents' phones. I think that'll take care of our quota nicely. Gentlemen, let's move on in our programming to talk about men's basketball. We've already discussed that the UNC victory from earlier this week. But when they went up to the other part of North Carolina, they have not played yet, or North, other part of the triangle, they've not played yet in NC State. They didn't do so hot. They kept pace for a while, especially closed the half pretty close. I think it ended up tied at half, but it ended up being a loss on the day by about 10 points, if I remember correctly. My note on this, as I watched with a frustrated disposition, was that this team is so hilariously volatile that I just don't know what to make of them at any given moment. Mr. Grant, you were also on the scene here, or at least on the scene watching this with us. What did you think?
Well, that's the interesting thing is they shot pretty well for the game, 41% from the field, 40.7 from three. Not great from the line, 68%. But I think where that really, kind of translates is NC State just got so many more attempts. And some of that's, a little bit of offensive rebounding, that they were decent offensive rebounders, but Tech turned the ball over 12 times. And I don't have the numbers for every single one of those turnovers, but dang, they did plenty good job making points from them. 18 points off of those 12 turnovers. Like I said, don't have the individual data points on all of them, but they cleaned up on that. 14 points was the difference in the margin on those points from turnovers. And you'll note that it was a 6-point game. I would argue probably not as close as the score indicates. There was some weird late, basketballing going on there. But yeah, no, it was a tough day in general. I don't know, a couple missed dunks, couple layups. This team's just, I would say, not quite good enough to have all of those things not click, whether it's free throws, turnovers, multiple players in foul trouble early, including Bayandungo fouling out, as well as Tafara Gapare. Yeah, I mean, it was a wild change from the UNC game. I don't want to dwell too much on it because I think that's kind of been something that defines this team all year, is their hilarious amount of inconsistency. But one thing I do want to say is Armando Bacot and his commentary on the ACC running through him after they beat Duke on Saturday. It's like, well, I guess the ACC also runs through Nate George because he ran right through you with 7 seconds left. So that counts as a dub.
Yeah.
I'll take that. This team is, again, hilariously inconsistent. There's still what, 10? We're assured 10 more games. We could get, if this team gets hot, they've shown that they can beat the class of the league. So getting the auto bid, not entirely out of the realm of possibility, but they have, I mean, for all the
It's
quality wins, they've certainly played themselves well off the bu well off the bubble. Like, that's not even an expectation at this point, at least to me.
right. Here's what I wonder. Do we want to intentionally line our bracket up in the ACC tournament that we only play like the top five teams in the tournament? Because those are the teams we actually know how to beat. But when it comes to everybody else, this is mostly a meme strategy, but
No. Make your own little pod and just play North Carolina and Duke
right.
at
And Clemson. And
McCamish
Clemson. And Clemson.
repeatedly.
Exactly.
Oh,
Exactly.
and Clemson. Yeah.
Go back to COVID
Only those
protocol.
teams, no one
Go back
else.
to COVID protocols, become the host of the tournament and then pot it up. Yeah, that'd be no, I mean, I think you're right though. Like there's a the large volatility isn't great on a season long stretch, but if you time it up right, the that might get you at least further into the tournament than you think you're gonna get. I don't think
It just.
I think we're still too volatile to even like
Oh,
string
yeah.
together three
Oh,
enough
yeah.
wins to win the ACC tournament. But yeah, you never know. I mean, we kind of would like I would like a few more just to not have like a bottom seeding and have to play those first games. But I
Well,
don't know.
and that's the thing, too, is they haven't shown that they can be consistent against quality teams at all, dare I
Right.
say. I think the ACC doesn't necessarily get quite the shine that it deserves this year. I think part of that's, big man history going out the window of, oh man, Coach K, Roy, Jim Boeheim. I think the ACC is a better conference than it gets credit for, but Georgia Tech has not taken care of business. And, it's been for all sorts of different reasons. Oh, we shot a ton of threes and the threes were cold. Oh, we missed a ton of shots from line. Oh, we turned the ball over a bunch. Oh, fouled out multiple players. Like, it's just everything. Like, it, and yeah, and I think the thing that I've been struggling, the square I've been struggling, no, circle I've been struggling to square, there we go, is that, like, to me, Miles Kelly and Debo Coleman and Kyle Sturtevant feel like they've been around forever. But this team is still quite young, all things considered. Nate George being a freshman, Bayandongo being a freshman, or one that hasn't played together all that long with some of the other, transfer components and things like that. And new coaching staff, like, it's not that I expected a tournament run this year, but wow. I mean, it's clearly something that's going to take some time. And hey, maybe they find it coming into February here. That's something we talked about at least briefly, in past podcasts this season so far.
Just an update on where Tech stands in the ACC. They are now third to last. They are 7 games back of league leaders North Carolina at 3-8 in the conference schedule. Overall, 10-12. Like you said, Jake, 9 games left plus the guaranteed ACC tournament game. So I don't know. Taking a look at the remaining schedule to do our annual tradition of schedule reading, as it were. Wake Forest on what is that Tuesday? Tuesday? Yeah, Tuesday. That's a 7 p.m. tip on ESPNU. Then at Louisville at the weekend, at Notre Dame next week, midweek, at Syracuse the weekend, or hosting Syracuse the weekend after that, Clemson at home the week or the midweek after that, Miami, Florida State, Wake Forest again, and then Virginia. So I want to say, like, Louisville and Notre Dame,
There's winnable games here. Yeah, there are absolutely winnable
like
games
I
here.
want to say that, but we also saw this team play Notre Dame earlier this year.
Right.
And even when we thought, hey, this is going to be an easier test for, the ACC, they still struggled. So I don't know what to make of the schedule going forward, honestly. I don't even want to put a number of wins or losses on it. I don't feel confident in any. You could tell me anything out of those 9 games, and I would probably buy it because they, on any given night, they can play really well, or they can also get blown out by Virginia Tech by like 20. So
Right.
who knows, right? Who knows? Let's move on to men's tennis. Their only match of the week after a West Coast trip was a quick 7 or 6-1 win, excuse me, over Georgia State. Nice and easy and breezy for the first outdoor match of the season. Jack, anything from you on this one?
It was breezy. They played outside for the first time, and there was indeed a breeze. So it was kind of fun to just see him just have to just play tennis with out literal weather conditions affecting them. It was a fantastic day to sit outside though, because it was like 61 degrees. There was not a cloud in sight. It's kind of the best situation to ever go to Ken Byers and watch tennis there. So I was very glad I got to see them play. They look good though. I am becoming more and more of a fan of Kaishav Chopra every time I see him play. That man just grinds points
Yep.
out really well. His ground strokes are just so freaking good. He can make some acrobatic stuff happen, or just stuff not like crazy acrobatic, but at least shots that don't look inherently obvious. He can do those shots. I mean, Andres is obviously our number one guy, but in terms of most fun watching play tennis, Kaishav has taken that top spot for me or on our team.
Oh yeah, and he plays with passion too. I mean, it's
Yeah.
just
Yes.
exciting to
Yes.
watch him play. Like the energy is always very high. And yeah, he was court three guy for a long time, so I often found myself there when I was at more matches, especially those, good old like Friday, Thursday type match late in the spring, I guess. I almost said fall. Whoops. Definitely not in the fall. Just to read out some scores before you go, I just want to make sure we get the scores on record. Andres Martin, or let's start with the doubles. Okay, Chopra McDaniel defeated State 6-3. Biagotti and Martin defeated State 6-4. And then on court three, Tech lost to State. That would be Aurora and Sakhdev lost to State 6-1. Martin won in straight sets and singles. Chopra also straight sets. State on court three beat McDaniel 7-5, 4-6, 13-11. So that's two tiebreakers in there. Court four, Richard Biagotti took care of business in straight sets. Aurora also in straight sets, and Shockery in on court six also in straight sets. So easy, definitely the word to describe this. Jake, sorry for interrupting, but your turn now.
Yeah, no worries. I was going to say easy breezy against State is a breath of fresh air, to be honest. This is a team that we've played a little close for a long time. So definitely very pleasing to see them, handle some business. I think that's, a logical step and something that's really refreshing to see. Team's quietly 7-1. Granted, that's not against any ranked competition. Alabama and Pepperdine probably the two best teams they've seen so far. But 7-1, stacking up some wins. That's kind of how we prognosticated the preseason or the non-con season, is it not, Jens?
That feels about how most of our teams on campus should do in non-con, just in general.
Well, I mean, Yeah.
but then again, you do have, and we're not to women's tennis yet. They play a brutal non-con slate. I mean, that
Yes,
it's for
that's
them to
true.
stack up wins. That would be quite different when you're playing
Right.
many ranked teams and going to ITAs. I think the men's team has accomplished the mission set in front of them, if that is a fair way to put that. Yeah. I'd say so far. 3 games left in that non-con slate, by the way. Tuesday, they'll go up to Athens for Clean Old Fashioned Hate Men's Tennis Edition. That's a 2 p.m. first serve. And then they'll be off for just about 3 weeks or 2 weeks, excuse me. Then they'll play UNC Wilmington at home. That's an 11 p.m. first serve on Saturday, February 24th. They'll also make that a doubleheader with Mercer coming to town later that day at 4 p.m. And then after that, in March, that's when the ACC slate starts. So a couple more games here to sort of get in the mix, get that competitive level high, and then the work starts of a gauntlet of an ACC slate, as it usually is. So interested to see how they're gonna do this year. I think this is kind of a I don't know if it's a make it or break it year, but we've been talking about this team being at the precipice for so many years now, and maybe this is the year after they build this confidence with this non-con slate. Maybe this is the year they make that jump and back into the tournament field.
That'd be great.
I don't know. Yeah.
That would be fantastic.
Non-con time is still the time for hope.
They've got the seniors to do it, so you know.
Sounds good to me. Let's move over to the tennis team, ranked 20th in the latest poll. They had a busy, busy week. They started off against Georgia State as well. I think that was a 7-0 sweep. And dropped a match to South Carolina before picking up a big win versus Northwestern earlier today. A bit of a mixed bag in terms of results, but there's a quality win in there against Northwestern, who's pretty consistent, pretty consistently top in the nation. Anyone have concrete thoughts about how this weekend went?
Yeah, I've got a couple. I will say, I think we're 23, by the way. But I mean, Georgia State got to win that one, kind of like we were talking about with the men. South Carolina, pretty notable there. But I think my point on the non-con from the men really rings true for the women as well. Is it's just a different beast, right? You know, South Carolina, Northwestern, not necessarily ranked, but teams that are in the thick of it. It NCAA qualifiers or even hosts. Not necessarily every year, but you know, a lot of years they'll peak up and get there. I think a 2-1 week is about as much as you can ask for from this team. They're kind of in an interesting spot, and you know, should be enough to, dare I say, hold serve coming into a pretty interesting week of non-con coming up.
You know, it looks like a close shave as well at South
mm-hmm.
Carolina. That's a 4-1 or a 4-3 decision, excuse me, and then a close shave going the other way versus Northwestern, another 4-3 decision. So Tech put together three really good singles matches, and just one more singles match, and they're moving in the right direction. But that's just sometimes how the cookie crumbles. So their next the next opponent will be at home versus Penn on Saturday, and then Sunday they'll also have clean old fashioned hate, except they'll host that at noon. Jack, any thoughts from you on the women's tennis weekend?
Not really the stuff I did not catch, but I mean, another a close loss is certainly better than a non-close loss. I mean, the ones outside of that seems like marginal progress from just how badly things were going when they were playing on the road in Michigan and elsewhere for ITAs. So that's, I guess, a step up that we're not in matches we're losing. We're not getting absolutely trounced in right now.
Fair enough. We'll be back to talk about women's basketball, softball, and a bundle of other stuff after this short break.
Yes, as always, this podcast and this site are brought to you in part by Section 103. As always, take a look at their stuff. 10% off using code FTRS. I almost always forget to work that into the ad read, so doing that first. But as always, they have exclusive, comfortable, and delightful, dare I say, Georgia Tech apparel. White, gold, navy, even some great stuff in there too. But always, always happy to talk about the fine stuff they're putting out, including, and you know, dare I say, ours truly, Miles Kelly, NIL t-shirts supporting him, and as well as other current Tech athletes. Always something to keep on the mind in this day and age of college athletics, and it's great to see, you know, a place where we can get very high quality, and I don't say that lightly, Georgia Tech apparel for, you know, ways to support our student athletes on the flats.
Welcome back to Signs of the South for February 4th. Let's talk about women's basketball, but maybe we skip the game versus Notre Dame, huh, Jack?
Maybe. Yeah, that was the worst game I have seen this team play in person. I have covered them for 3 years. They did lose a game by 41 points last year. This was only a 38 point loss, but it had a thing that I checked with Kurt Hoyt on the radio about this too. They let Notre Dame score 26 straight points against them, over the span of about 10 and a half minutes, which, if you know how the game is divided by quarters, you know that the quarters are 10 minutes long. So Tech didn't score a basket for over a quarter. And that pretty much did him in. That was about it. It just what Nell put it, it's just the night where the bottom fell out. You think you're ready to go, and then in about 8 minutes, you were clearly not. And so that's how that played out. They did win the fourth quarter, but literally the entire second half was garbage time. So nothing good about that at all. Caleb Blackshear was back from injury, so like we were full strength, and still stuff like that happens. And also the bad part is that Notre Dame wasn't even at full strength. They had five players out. And
Yeah, I think the final score here, 85 to 48. And my response to seeing that final score was the GIF of Taylor Twellman after the US got eliminated from World Cup qualification in 2018, screaming on SportsCenter, "What are we doing?" Because that, I think, is kind of how I feel about this team. It's weird because, especially after this Wake Forest game today, in which they won by three, and we'll get to that in a minute. They're what, five games above 500?
Yeah, they did
Yes,
well
some
in
of
non-con,
those,
but yeah, still.
and some of those games are against like definitely not the best quality teams. Like Wake Forest is 0-9. Again, we'll talk about it, but 0-9 in conference, excuse me. But it's a similar problem to the men where there's that level of volatility, but it's like at a lower gear. You know, the highs aren't as high. And
Right.
maybe the
Yeah.
lows aren't as low, but
They've
it's
curtailed, yeah.
still up
They've
and down,
curtailed.
up and down, up and down.
Yeah, they've curtailed the edges of the volatility at least a little bit. But it's sadly they've curtailed both the top end and the bottom end of that, where they're not generally good enough, and they don't have the floor general to like take over games and just have someone just beat a team with on their own. But then they're good enough to also just not to not lose to teams like Wake Forest like they should. Yeah, Wake Forest is 0-10 in ACC play after that game, 4-18 overall.
And it was a close shave. I think this kind of feeds our point, right? Only winning by three against a team that is demonstrably bad in conference. And obviously, you know, being the stats guy, I have to mention, like, maybe some of that is due to luck, some shots not falling. Maybe some of those are close games. I haven't looked at Wake Forest's schedule outright to say if they're lucky or unlucky. But still, if Wake Forest is the team that their record,
I'm
and
looking
some of the
at,
parts of this game said that they were,
yeah,
this is not a safe result, right?
I'm looking at the scores now, and the record absolutely reflects, the scores absolutely reflect their record. Like, this is the closest game they have played in about 3 weeks, where they also lost by three to Boston College, but they've been losing by like 20 to 30 points a game.
Yeah, and that's versus ACC competition, right? It's the exact same teams that Tech is playing. And yes, the ACC, I think, has gotten better at the top end, and there are a lot more teams at the top end. And I can see Jake.
This team was so close to 40, not 48 months ago, 24 months ago. And I don't know if it's the necessarily the lack of a big center or what, but I just can't let them, I don't say let them off the hook because that's not the right word for it, but this team is talented. Like Kerrick Dunn, Caleb Blackshear, Tony Morgan, that's the start of a great core. Rusne Agustinate, like those are good, high quality players that you've identified and brought into your system. Cam Schwartz, great transfer. Lodomai Lotnin, like great player. These are, and granted, look, Jack, you can correct me if I'm wrong here. Lodomai, I think, was a Michelle Joseph's recruit. No?
Yes, correct. She was here
Okay,
before that now. Yeah.
that's what I thought, because I think she overlapped with Francesca Pond, but I
She
think
did. Yeah.
Fran got 1 year under Nell. It's all very fuzzy. But all that to say, like, I don't think there's been a drop off in quality. Player-wise, but I don't know. If anything, it feels like there's a lot of talent around the team and it's just not clicking. And I think that's where I kind of, and I
Yeah.
shouldn't say it's not clicking because they're, you know what, four games above 500, but
Yeah,
it
for the most part, it is working. hindsight has told me the Cam Swartz thing didn't go great. Neither did Bianca Jackson, for that matter. They're supposed to be.
No,
they're both supposed to be
all.
Big time scorers, and
yeah,
neither of them were good often enough. We don't have a backup point guard because Sydney Johnson does not score points, and that's her job as a point guard. That was what she did at Boston University, was score a crap ton of points, and she has not been effective for us. Like, has just we don't score. She does not score on the floor basically at all. Which is,
I do feel like we don't have that presence down low too,
yeah,
though.
The depth,
and that's two of the five positions on the court, right?
Right. Yeah. No, Kayla is effectively playing the five this year, when she's mm-hmm. more of a power forward kind of person. Aisha Von Ehrenhout theoretically supposed to play the five. It has rendered herself unplayable most of the time. Ari Termas, not bad at it, like, is the one true center on this team, and can shoot from deep as well, which is cool to see. But there's still some she's a freshman, a lot of she's a freshman still there, but also none of I have not like those teams you're those players you're talking about, like, that team had a killer instinct.
Yep.
Where they had something they could rely on to just beat down teams with, and that was the Francesca, Kubai, Lodomai, Hermosa, and Digna Stratmane, like, complete lockdown defense. Like, you were not gonna get a single easy shot in for the large percentage of a game. It was going to be extremely difficult. We weren't great on offense either, but at the very least, we could, if we got to 40 points, there's a non-zero shot we were going to win the game with 40, because we were that good on defense. And this team is simply not. Like, they cannot win games this way. It's the same problem to do with the men's team. Like, there's just not, and the defense is not there. Tony's just a sophomore. I'm still giving her the benefit of the doubt here, but next season we have to see her as a upperclassman truly be a lockdown scorer for us, or be the floor general we need, because right now we don't have that floor general. Kara Dunn may score the most points for us, but she's kind of like a Klay Thompson, like, obviously 1B here, and just is the shooter, not the dribble down to the lane kind of stuff. So, yeah, there's work to be done. There's absolutely work to be done here. A lot of work to be done here. So, they're middle of the pack in the ACC still. They're 5-6 in conference play. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They're eighth right now. So in terms of where they are in the ACC at this time compared to last year, they are better. So we can't say
there's
not
progress, but it's unknown, like, what the delta is, I guess.
Yeah. I'm not sure how much better this. They are better than last year, but they have to fill in the rest of the roster next year. The transfers have not hit for the most part since Digna Stratmane.
I think the thing that
was a 1 year rental type
right
deal.
Yeah,
too.
I guess Sarah Bates would be more the real person you'd say there. And
yeah,
sure.
That was a three years of that. I think the thing that bothers me with this team, and I guess the men to be as well, is that we have, like, I think the last 4 or 5 weeks, even in weeks that they've won games, we've had the exact same conversation about both teams, right? That they're young, they're raw, this isn't the final form, like, and men, maybe you can give them a pass just because new, like, first year, new coach.
Oh yeah, no,
cetera,
I give them much more of a pass. There's so everything is due about that team. Like,
with the women, because of the, and I think Jake, you said this earlier, you don't want to let them off the hook, that being a bad motive for notwithstanding, but, like, I want to see them turn that corner, right? I've been waiting for them to turn that corner. And every week that we have the same discussion about their weaknesses and continuing to see those weaknesses on display, I am more frustrated, I think. Maybe that's just my expectations haven't been properly reset. Maybe it's just my priors are set so high because of what we've seen this team do in tournament play in recent memory. And we haven't and I haven't adjusted down, but I think I want them to turn the corner. And I think every week that I don't see it, it's just a little bit more, like, my frustration meter goes up. And I guess we'll see what next week brings. I mean, their first game next week is on Thursday versus Syracuse. That's a 7 p.m. tip. Syracuse is the team that 2 years ago, that's where Dean Strootman came from. That roster completely imploded after a scandal over there.
We didn't really talk about the fact that Syracuse had multiple women's sports implode completely in like a 2 year span ever. But that's something that really did happen.
Something that did happen. And I want to also mention the upshot of that. This Syracuse women's basketball team right now is actually like decent. Yep.
They're good.
Decent, if not good. Like 100% good.
They're 18 and
four.
And
that's a 2 year rebuild.
Yeah. Right? 18 and four, fourth in the ACC right now at 8-3. They're doing things right. They're 11-1 at home, which all the best teams in the ACC right now are solid at home. I was looking at the schedule and the standings. We have not beaten a single team that's ahead of us in the ACC. We've only beaten teams below us in the ACC so far, and we have about half and half ish of our games left in that category. So our Syracuse game that's next, they are obviously above us, and then our next home game is Miami. They are below us. They are right below us at 4-6 in the ACC.
That game versus Miami is Sunday at 2 p.m. And speaking of Miami, if we're talking about roster construction again, yes, they have that NIL life wallet nonsense, but there's still a level of quality to that roster as well that puts it above Tech even this year, right? And I don't know, like it's just been a weird couple of years watching this team and wanting them to turn the corner, I think, for me. So we'll keep an eye on it. You know, we'll try not to have this same conversation again next week, hopefully, Lord willing. But let's move on. Let's move on over to softball. We had a preview of 2024 softball season last week with Madison Myers, like we opened the episode with. So if you're interested, go listen to that. But this weekend coming up is opening weekend with the Buzz Classic. Here is your schedule. Thursday is opening day. That is a 4 p.m. first pitch versus Villanova. Friday is a doubleheader, 4 p.m. versus Alabama, and then 6:30 p.m. versus Villanova. Saturday is a 4 p.m. first pitch versus Alabama. And then on Sunday, starting at noon, is a doubleheader versus Longwood. Mr. Grant, you are our foremost softball expert. What do you make of this field for opening weekend?
It's pretty diverse, I think. Alabama, good team. SEC. I mean, this is the one sport where I will say, okay, yes, the SEC is very good. Legitimately, in a given year, every single team in that conference has a shot to make the tournament, and that's only going to get more true. Well, actually, maybe some of the dregs will take more L's with Texas and Oklahoma in the league, but you get my point. Like, very high quality top to bottom. Alabama has been, you know, a regular Oklahoma City, I almost said Omaha, Oklahoma City contender for a long time. Villanova, quality Big East program, and then Longwood. You know, you got to beat Longwood. I think on the weekend, if you can go, 2-0 against Villanova and Longwood and 1-1 against Alabama, that would be a ridiculously great showing. That's 5-1. I think more realistic is probably, a 4-2 type weekend, I think, is probably more realistic. Is that a fair way to put it, Jens?
Yeah.
Dare I say even 3-3? It's we're gonna have to learn a lot about this pitching staff for particularly the Alabama games. I trust enough that offense for Villanova and Longwood will be there. You know, maybe it's cold and the bats start a little cold or something like that. But it's really keeping runs off the board against Bama. That's my big question.
It's interesting that you say we need to learn about this pitching staff because they're both returning starters from last year. Right?
For multiple years.
But they performed so well in 1 year and so terribly in the other year. Well, for their standards that they had set the previous, that we have no idea what we're going to get out of them in terms of consistency. It's just, it's so, like,
it's
if,
weird,
we, if
yeah.
we didn't root for this team, I would find this fascinating instead of frustrating.
Right. My guess is they'll throw Chandler on Thursday and use Blake for the Friday, the first Bama game on Friday. Maybe they think they can kind of go both ways with that. They don't really care if there is a number one, like a true number one, if they both consider them both number ones. I don't actually know if that's the case or not, but definitely getting one of the two of them there. I would not be surprised if Longwood we start dipping into Voiles and Studebaker and the fresh, and I forgot the freshman girl's name, which is terrible. That I'm forgetting it off the top of my head, but yeah, we'll see the pitching depth this coming weekend for sure. When you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games in 4 days, so they're gonna they will get a very early chance to stretch the arms that they have.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull up last year's Buzz Classic just to look at the pitching matchups. So give me a second here. So last year's Buzz Classic was UConn, St. Francis, North Texas. And then state was a midweek. So that's fine. On opening day, they did start Chandler Dennis and then had Kinsey Norton come in relief. In the second game versus UConn, Blake Nelliman went the distance. And let's see. I'm opening each of these box scores up one by one. You can hear my voice stalling. Chandler Dennis again for game three. And then Blake Nelliman and Kinsey Norton for game four, excuse me.
Yeah.
So they'll do some rotation. I just don't know how much, I think, is the way to put it.
Right.
And I think the Achilles heel of this team has consistently been, well, one, it's been pitching consistency. But let's say that Dennis and Nelliman are back to 2022 form. Then it becomes who becomes the third starter that's trustworthy.
Yep.
And that is still a question mark to me.
Even then, it's not necessarily getting a third reliable lights out starter in there. It's just a fireman type arm, or like, you know, not necessarily closer, because, you know, we don't necessarily see a closer in every game. I think the biggest question for me is, you know, is one of those one or two arms just out of the bullpen in so far that you don't have to throw Dennis on a day that Nelliman is pitching and vice versa, and you can be relatively confident. I think that's how I would frame it. Maybe it does turn into a third starter type situation, but I don't know. I think having 1-2 and then, you know, a fireman type reliever, a la the Terry Busey when he was super effective last year for baseball, if you will, or, you know, get your one inning out of Tristan English. You can find this everywhere in baseball, softball, you name it. But I think that's kind of where my brain's at.
I'll be curious if Boyles or Norton makes a leap.
Yeah.
For the most part, because I mean, they're the next most experienced there who have got plenty of innings in the past. But to some, not to some peril, but to some much closer eyes, because you kind of had to be careful when you did throw them in a game to make sure it wasn't going to cost you. So that elevating to pass that fear would be so nice.
I'm going to ask both of you to make a hot take here. Mm-hmm. Jake, I'm going to start with you. What is your hot take on this team if they go 2-0 versus number 14 Alabama on this weekend?
I think my hot take there is that they could drop an 0-6 or 0-7 in Clearwater and still be in the too early tournament field if they go 2-0 against Bama. Is that bold? I think that's bold.
That's pretty bold, Jack. What say you?
If that happened, my guess would be that Bama was not truly the number 14 team in the country. Yeah. That's more what I would believe. If we like beat the crap out of them, like I'd be like, okay, maybe this offense is worth something that could make you a frisky. But I think that's it. It's just that, okay, I would be even more cautious ecstatic if we win both those games, but then at the same time, absolutely not banking on anything for those games when we get to Clearwater.
Clearwater is a terrifying, terrifying prospect for me to think about. So let's wrap up with a couple more news and notes across the board. Football has hired another defensive backs coach that will finish Brent Key's defensive infinity gauntlet. Corey Peoples has been hired over from neighboring Georgia State to coach defensive backs. In golf news, the Amerari Intercollegiate starts on Thursday, February 8th. That will open up golf spring slate. And ahead of that, Christo Lambrecht is currently second in the PGA's collegiate standings. So congrats to him. And hopefully the guys have a lot of fun over in Hawaii for the Amerari. Moving over to swim and dive, the Auburn Last Chance meet is Friday. Like it says on the tin, it's the last chance before your major competitions to round out the year, your conference competitions, your NCAAs, et cetera, et cetera. So keep an eye out for results about that next week. In terms of club sports news, hockey had a couple of games this week versus Embry-Riddle. Haven't seen results for those yet, but we will get to you those as soon as we can. They have two more games next weekend, which I believe wraps up their slate before the playoffs, versus Alabama-Huntsville. That will be the 9th and the 10th. Both of those games are at home at the Atlanta Ice Forum. On the side of lacrosse, the number 4 club lacrosse team in the nation, they picked up a victory versus receiving votes in the poll, Clemson, 15-11. Their next two games next weekend will be versus number 25 Auburn. That's a Friday 7 p.m. start, and then number 20 Colorado, Sunday 1 p.m. start. Both of those games are at home. Gentlemen, any other news and notes before we move on to trivia?
Nope. I just say go check out lacrosse if you do have the opportunity here in Midtown. There's two ranked opportunities this week, and they're pretty good, defending SCLC champions and all that good stuff. So that's probably my one off the beaten path thing to flag this week. But even there, so I don't even know if off the beaten path is very fair to say, because they draw really, really well for a club team and have a great following and a great program that they put together with that staff. They keep doing it, man, every year.
They are a machine. At some point, they have to break through. At some point, God willing, they will break through, but it just hasn't happened yet. Last note for me, we will have a baseball season preview out next week. We're working on a couple of guests here and there to see what we could do there. We also have a couple of interviews out with the baseball team. Two members of the baseball team out already on your podcast feed. So take a look at those in preparation for opening weekend for baseball in a couple of weeks.
You can find us from therumbleseat.com. As always, you can find us there. We put up articles doing other stuff around tech sports, but including these fine podcasts as well. Tell your friends, like we said, we do appreciate it. Rate, review, subscribe. You can email us with your content, your comments, your feedback, all that good stuff. We do appreciate anything that comes our way from therumbleseat@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at FTRS blog. I'm at Jake Grant 98 for at Jack Nicholas and at Section 103 and Section103.com. Thank you for tuning in. You can find this podcast wherever fine podcasts are distributed. Good night, good luck, and go Jackets.
Gentlemen, let's move on to trivia. Mr. Grant, what say you for this week?
So Jack and I were talking before we hit record about how today was kind of a gray Sunday. And I was like, you know what? I'm curious. And I was first going to do Sundays only, but then I realized that was kind of a silly small sample size since men's basketball and football essentially never play on Sundays. So I opened up the Saturday as well. And I'm curious who you all think Georgia Tech's weekend warriors are. Out of all the Georgia Tech sports teams, who would be the best on a weekend, out of the 8 that we have in our sample size?
Football.
Really? Close, but no cigar.
Really? It's not
interesting because they do play a lot of weekend games. It is football.
Sheer number of wins over the sheer number of years was just going to be enough, but okay.
Nope. There's two teams above them. How's that?
Oh, okay.
So, my gut instinct on this one was baseball.
Well, your gut instinct would be right.
Yeah, it's been around just as long, and they play games over the weekend. They play two more games usually on the weekend. So more opportunities, similar win percentage.
But the wild thing is, so baseball 608 all time on the weekend, volleyball 599, football 589. Baseball is actually a 608 overall as well. So no bump one way or the other over the weekend. Men's basketball takes the biggest bump downwards when comparing the weekends to the middle of the week. They are 0.037 worse. So all of these are pretty close in there. I thought there might be some more divergence there. The plus side, not too much in the plus direction. Football is slightly better on weekends than weekdays. I think that probably has some combination of never having FCS games or G5 games on weekdays, playing big bowl games or big start of the season events on weekdays, things like that. But I thought it was interesting. I thought maybe we'd see a little bit more divergence there. Of note, like I said, men's basketball does have the biggest difference between all games and the weekends. But I also took this sample size by coach because I thought that would be kind of interesting who our weekend warrior coaches were. Do you have a guess? And this is not weighted for number of games played, though I do have that as well. But just off the top of your head, who do you think has the biggest bump in playing weekend games versus weekday games? I did clean out coaches that only coached a bowl game for football, but I didn't wait based on total sample size for this.
You're telling me John Tenuta wouldn't show up in the sample? How dare you?
John Tenuta, I think, was 0-0, which matches his all-time record, but I can't remember about that one. Maybe he wasn't. I didn't blaspheme John Tenuta. He was 0-1. So,
womp womp. So
any guesses?
Coaches across all sports that are best on the weekend.
Unweighted by sample size for the most interesting one.
Unweighted by sample size.
Danny Hall.
Oh
no, okay.
No, because weighted by sample size.
Well, that's right.
I was going to say weighted by sample size. Danny Hall is the fifth most better on weekdays than weekends, which makes sense because in the modern baseball schedule, you play your cupcakes Tuesday and Wednesday.
Okay.
Unweighted by sample size. This is doing a lot of work for us here.
Yeah,
I think you're just going to have to give it to us.
You guys are going to be so mad at me when I tell you who this is.
All right.
So, okay, I'm going to just start spitting out fun facts about this guy. And if you can guess, that would be delightful. He currently does have a city / major municipality of some sort in Missouri named after him. I believe he was Governor General of the Philippines.
Governor General of the Philippines.
He already, I believe, had a doctorate from Harvard before enrolling at Georgia Tech.
Trebek, these Jeopardy questions are not answerable.
Oh, they're very answerable. He was player coach for this team. He coached for one season.
And we had a lot of those.
This is the guy that beat Georgia for the first time, whose name I can't remember, who has like two initials and then an actual last name.
Lieutenant Leonard Wood has the biggest differential between
do not know who this man is.
You don't know who Leonard Wood is. I think he had
some. I got the
yeah, you got there. He served in the Spanish-American War and all that. I was going to say good stuff, but I'll leave the qualifier out of it.
If I remember correctly, he's never mentioned without the qualifier of lieutenant. Like,
correct.
Nowhere is he's never actually mentioned by just a Leonard Wood. It's always a Lieutenant Leonard Wood.
I believe he became a general at some point in there too. But he was He was 2-2 on weekends and 2-4 overall per my records. Also up there, this actually, no, I'm going to make you guys guess. Weighted by number of games played, who do you think has the best difference between the weekends and the weekdays?
This would have to be baseball, softball.
Baseball's on the right track.
So it's either Danny or...
Nope. Danny's got the negative, remember? Because he plays all the Tuesday, Wednesday games.
Heisman?
It's John Heisman. Weighted by the number of games coached, John Heisman has the biggest differential between weekend and all games. And I believe that is likely due to coaching football on the weekends and a very terrible Georgia Tech basketball team in 1908 on the weekday. Well, not just 1908, but you get the idea. Also of note, Bobby Dodd scores very well, I think for similar reasons, as well as Kid Clay, who are all involved in multiple sports, with the better ones playing more weekend games. Kenny Thorne finishes fourth in this metric, current men's tennis coach. Earl Bottrell, also a former tennis coach. And then Paul Johnson, sixth on that list. So, you know, do these stats mean anything? Probably not. But yeah, I thought they were pretty interesting. At least something to talk about and for me to make you guys writhe in the wind about ancient army generals and lieutenants. So that was fun.
Look, I've just looked up Leonard Wood on Wikipedia. I was honestly kind of shocked that he had a Wikipedia page, but now I'm immensely curious. Let's talk about his titles. Governor General of Cuba immediately after the Spanish-American War. Governor of Moro Province, which is basically the first governor of Moro Province, which is basically the southern half of the Philippines. Chief of Staff of the U.S. Army immediately before World War I, and then Governor General of the Philippines after World War I. Just an incredible life. He was, let's see, there was one more thing. Chief of Staff of the Army. He was personal physician to Presidents Grover Cleveland and William McKinley through 1898, immediately before he was Governor General of Cuba. This guy has done everything.
Yeah, pretty much. That's why it was interesting trivia.
Fascinating life to have lived. Oh, and he had a 1920 presidential campaign.
He also received the Medal of Honor for his service in the Wars of the West.
Guys, I'm sorry. I lost track about 8 minutes ago before the history lesson got.
Oh, no. Last thing.
Is this HCS 2015 or something?
That class was fun, but this fact might be better. In 1910, he had a benign meningioma, which a brain tumor, to put it in non-medical terms. He was at, like, the first successful removal of a brain tumor. No, he was a successful remover of a brain tumor and represented a personal or an important milestone in the, at that time, nascent field of neurosurgery, extended his life by almost two decades, and got his brain held at the Yale University of Medicine as part of a historic collection.
Yeah.
Insane individual.
I will say one other thing. I've seen other sources cite his record as 2-1-1. I base my records off of what I find in the media guide. So, you know, sources may differ. It happened in 1892. All of this is just a way for me to talk about Leonard Wood. Oh, yeah. And he got his portrait painted by John Singer Sargent, which is, you know, one of the most iconic American artists to ever have lived, right? I mean, that's...
Is this going to be on the test?
Sure. I can make a test.
No.
He will actually make a test. He did. When we were in Rec Club, I did have to take a test made by this guy.
Oh, this
and it was not fun, let me tell you.
That was fun. That was fun for me.
If our listeners would like to take the science of the Southland, or to take history exam, over the
don't,
summer.
Don't get him started. I swear. He will actually make
we
one
will have
and
you on the
actually put it
podcast
online.
And record the question and answering session. Maybe we won't do that.
Terrifying.
I do recommend Apocalypse Sports Trivia for all your sports trivia needs, though.
One last thing. Can I read out the chant from 1893 football team that
there's
they
more
would
in this
yell?
Lecture? Oh my
hold on,
god!
Hold on. Can I read it first before you do so I can determine if it's appropriate for audio?
No, it is. It is. It's just so stupid.
Okay, hit me with it.
Techity tech, who wrecks, boom rah, Georgia. That was the chant. That was
You're
what they did
me
for
this
his
podcast
team.
Could have been called Techity Tech the whole time.
Yeah, pretty much.
Innovation and chants has simply just not occurred. This has never occurred. God.
Yeah,
wow.
Good old the Georgia Tech Techs.
Steven, if you're listening, I request the Techity Tech shirt immediately, please.
Oh, I can see it in like Impact font, like 1990s like cartoon font. Techity
yes.
Techs with a buzz on the on like the left side. It'd
with
be
sickly
pretty...
with sickly buzz, right?
No. Cartoon
not sickly
buzz.
Buzz?
The whole Techity Tech is just like some real Looney Tunes stuff. So you got to lean all the way into it.
Okay. Fair. Yeah.
So then maybe it's that Buzz that's got like the helmet on that looks kind of like Buzz. You know what I'm talking about, right?
The thing that immediately
Home
came to
Field
mind
makes
for
a
me.
Shirt with him. The
I was thinking of the like the sign that's on the door of the MRDC with Buzz wearing a construction hat and holding like a wrench.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah,
what
yeah,
I was
I love
thinking
wrench
of.
Buzz. I love Buzz doing stuff. Buzz doing stuff is perfection. Swimming Buzz, atop Buzz, wrench Buzz. Ooh, the Chem-E Buzz with the it's not a graduated cylinder. Shoot, which one's he holding? It's not a beaker. Oh, I can picture it. Dang it. But I know it's not those. But you know what I'm talking about. It's like got the green stuff in it. Like, oh yeah, what's Buzz cooking?
Oh yes. Okay, so I know the
or Buzz with lightning
the
bolts.
Buzz. I recognize the Buzz with the helmet that you're talking about, the one that looks like one of like the Looney Tunes characters.
Oh, I
but
see.
Actually
okay.
Looks like one of the Looney Tunes like alien characters. Yeah, I'd be down for that. I'll take it. Also, mascots doing sports stuff, legendary. Like the
Buzz with
Oklahoma
basketball?
State Cowboy.
Yep.
Oklahoma State Cowboy golfing. Pretty sick.
Don't they have like an Oklahoma State like whatever their mascot's name is, like doing like their ag school where he's just like
Cowboys, the Cowboys
farming, like
you mean a cowboy doing cowboy things?
Sure, yeah, go for it.
Oklahoma State Pistol Pete doing stuff. Okay, images. Let's see. Okay, well, this just gives me images of the actual physical mascot. Give me the logos. Well, this is okay. There's one of him doing the lassoing, which is pretty sick. I'm not gonna lie.
That's
just normal cowboy stuff.
This is what happens after we stop recording, guys. Like, this is not. This is the. We just didn't stop recording.
This is the outro. You can put it after the.
Yes.
What,
after
the post show?
Put it after the music. Yeah, put it after the music.
20 minutes of post show on mascots. Let's see. Let me put this into Google instead of DuckDuckGo. Pistol Pete, mascot logo doing sports. Oh, here we go.
Oh,
this is
OSU
exactly
Polo?
What I wanted.
Oh, this slaps. Hold on.
Oh, there wasn't as many as I wanted. Damn, there's only a couple.
Hold on. I like that.
I know
Wyoming's logo.
Got a ton. I think there's Pistol
I sent it
Pete's,
to y'all.
Pistol Pete swimming.
Oh
they don't
God,
have a swimming
amazing.
Pistol Pete.
They may not have a swim team, bro.
Yeah, I don't know
it's
if they
Oklahoma
have.
State.
Yeah.
All right. Pistol Pete mascot logo rodeo. All right. Well, that was disappointing. Pistol Pete. I know they have a golf one.
I see him wrestling. Here's the doc, the med school, Dr. Pistol Pete.
The wrestling, dude, this guy's yoked. Good God. He's ripped.
I'm so so glad that we get to talk about Oklahoma State on this podcast.
Again, I thought we were done with
again.
These people.
This is
I
twice
thought we
in
were
a month.
Done with this.
What are we
oh, hey, here's a fun one. There, in this search that I've done for the wrestling logo, there's a image here that from Oklahoma City's local news that says survey ranks Oklahoma State's Pistol Pete as worst mascot in the country. Oof.
Yeah.
That is rough.
Anywho,
okay.
I'm going to take
this
out so we can.
I think we've
I think
done too much.
My soup might be burning on the stove, you know. Just kidding. It's not. I'm very responsible. Anywho.